The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 5, text number 19, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on April 7th, 2008, in Birkenfeld, Germany.
So today, it is auspicious gathering. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 5, text number 19.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Na prahrishyat priyam prapya, no dvijat prapya cha priyam. Stira bhudhir rasam mudho, pramadhid brahmanishtitaha. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Purport. The symptoms of the self-realized person are given herein. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. He knows perfectly well that he is not this body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to his body. This steadiness of mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligence. Plenty of room right here. No, this is closer, this is better. Those disciples should not be on the same level. This steadiness of mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligence. He is therefore never bewildered by mistaking the gross body for the soul, nor does he accept the body as permanent and disregard the existence of the soul. This knowledge elevates him to the station of knowing the complete science of the Absolute Truth, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. He thus knows his constitutional position perfectly well, without falsely trying to become one with the Supreme in all respects. This is called Brahman realization or self-realization. Such steady consciousness is called Krishna consciousness.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam vidanscha.
So, what is our present position? The present time, when things go great, we get excited, we get elated. Oh wow, this is great. And then when things turn sour, we go, oh, become despondent. Depression. So the point is, if you allow yourself to get excited when things are going great, all you're doing is inviting depression to come when things go bad. Success and failure go hand in hand. Just like now it is the daytime. So, will night follow? Of course. Wherever there is day, night is sure to follow. And wherever there is night, day is sure to follow. So, wherever there is happiness in this material existence, distress is sure to follow it. Wherever there is health, sickness is sure to come. And wherever there is sickness, health is sure to come. These are called the dualities of material existence. So an unintelligent person, a materialistic person, he is riding the waves of these dualities, up and down, up and down, up and down. He's forever tossed in the waves of these dualities. But the transcendentalist is smarter than that. Transcendentalists can analyze things very clearly, that these dualities are going to happen. I'm going to be healthy, I'm going to be sick, I'm going to be awake, I'm going to be asleep. Is it? These are the dualities. It's going to come. Sleep follows wakefulness, and wakefulness follows sleep, naturally. Happiness follows distress, and distress follows happiness. These things go on cyclically. In the material world, they're happening eternally like that. It's an endless cycle. So you can be buffeted by those waves, or you can rise beyond those waves so you're no longer affected by them. This wonderful verse describes a person who is transcendentally situated, who does not allow himself or herself to be punished by these waves, to be tortured by these waves. It's actually a torturous situation to be caught up in these waves. Or, another way of seeing it is, the transcendentalist knows perfectly well how to ride those waves. He uses them to move himself forward, as I've described recently. A businessman, whether the market is going up or it's going down, he's still moving his business forward, isn't he? When the prices go up, what does he do? He sells. When the prices go down, what does he do? He buys. So in this way, his business, his empire is always expanding, expanding, expanding. Doesn't matter, in the U.S. they call it a bear market and a bull market on the stock exchange. An up market or a down market, it doesn't matter. Either way, he's playing his investments just right, so he's always moving his business forward, 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 forward. So the transcendentalist, he is the keenest investor of them all, you see. He invests his energies. He invests his thoughts, his words, and his deeds in such a way that he's always moving forward in Krishna consciousness. Another step closer to Krishna, another step closer to Krishna. You see, it doesn't matter whether it's happiness or distress. He can utilize either one of them to move forward, just like in sailing. Last night Karina Sindhu Prabhu was telling me. In sailing the wind is coming like this, you can go this way with the wind, or you can even move in the direction of the wind. There's a technique, a zigzag technique. You can go straight into the wind, do a zigzag technique. So it doesn't matter which way the wind blows, it can be blowing this way or this way, but you can still go to Krishna, you see. Whether it's happiness or it's distress, either way you're moving forward steadily. So one who has mastered this art, you see, is known as equipoised person. He's not, the other type is called moody. He's really a moody person. We say moody. It's the same thing as mugs. He's moody. A moody person means someone who's being affected by the modes of nature. If it's a bright sunny day, he's all happy and jolly. If it's gray and dreary, he becomes depressed. That's a moody person, a modi person, who's not seeing things in relation with Krishna. When one sees everything in relation with Krishna, you can say, this is great, wow. Every moment is like, wow, this is a great opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. You see? So this is one of the most important verses of the whole Bhagavad Gita. This is a real gem, actually. This shloka, 520, is a real gem. I've discovered by years of studying the Bhagavad Gita that each verse has a personality. Each verse is a friend. You see, it's like I have many different friends. It's like I have my friend, my godbrother Hema Sharir. He's my friend. So I have so many friendships, and each friend has different qualities, different characteristics, and each friend is sweet in a different way. You see. So in the same way, each and every verse of the Bhagavad Gita is a friend with its own particular characteristics and flavors, you see, its own personality. So this verse is very, very special verse. To help one become situated beyond rejoicing and lamenting. So those are the first two points covered in the verse. And the next one is self-intelligent. Na prahirshyat means he doesn't rejoice. Upon it, na prahirshyat priyam. Priyam means that which is pleasant. Something is pleasant, he doesn't rejoice. He gets all excited and elated, as we say in English with the word giddy. He becomes silly with happiness. He loses his sobriety over some good news. He goes crazy when some happy things happen. He loses his intelligence. And then prapya, achieving. Naprahirshat priyam prapya, achieving something pleasant, he does not rejoice. In the second line, naudvijat prapya cha priyam. He doesn't become agitated when he gets something unpleasant. Apriyam. The unpleasant thing. Self-intelligence, sthira buddhi. Asammudha, unbewildered. Nothing bewilders him. He's completely cool-headed. Prabhupada always said like that, we keep a cool head. You see? Even if we were having a fight with someone, a debate, he encouraged us actually in Austin. There was one Mayavadi professor at the university. He was very popular with the hippies. In those days, it was wide open. He would be giving a lecture in his big hall, and everybody was welcome to come and hear his lectures. You could be a student or a non-student, it didn't matter. So he was preaching Mayavadi philosophy, and all the hippies he was the talk of all the hippies. Everybody would go sit in his classes, you see. So Prabhupada heard about this Mayavadi professor. He told us we should challenge him in debate. Public debate. But Prabhupada said, with a cool head. So the devotee always keeps a cool head, no matter what's going on. It can be pleasant, it can be unpleasant, it can be peaceful, it can be even a fighting atmosphere, like a debate with the Mayavadis. The devotee always keeps a cool head. Because his happiness does not depend on the external situation. See, this is the problem of the neophyte devotee. We see this again and again for neophytes. They think their happiness depends on the external situation. But there was one devotee, actually, he was a brahmachari. You see, and you think, oh, I'm so miserable being a brahmachari. I think I need to get married, and I'll be happy. So he got married for a few weeks or whatever, and then he wrote Prabhupada again and said, Prabhupada, I'd like to become a sannyasi. It's the old saying, grass is greener on the other side of the fence. You know, the cow will stick its head through the other side. And you think, it must be better on the other side of the fence because I'm not allowed over there, you see. So the brahmachari is thinking, well, because I can't associate with a woman, therefore I think I'd be better off to be married. And then he gets married, thinks, well, now I'm stuck with a woman, I think it'd be better, you know, not to be married. So, but Prabhupada didn't like very much his attitude. Prabhupada didn't like it at all. Prabhupada corrected him. He said, your happiness does not depend on your external situation. He said, you are feeling unhappy because of your own lack of Krishna consciousness. So a brahmachari shouldn't think, well, if I get married, I'll be happy. He just thinks I'm lacking Krishna consciousness. A householder shouldn't think, if I just take sannyas, then I'll be happy. Because it simply means you're lacking in Krishna consciousness. If you're Krishna conscious, you can be happy as a brahmachari, you can be happy as a householder, happy as a sannyasi, you can be happy in any position if you're Krishna conscious. So, Prabhupada in that way corrected him. It is your own lack of Krishna consciousness. Do not blame the external situation. It's your own lack of Krishna consciousness. So that instruction of Prabhupada is very much tied into this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. The self-intelligent person understands my happiness is simply my own Krishna consciousness. That's all I need. I can be put in any situation and be happy. Because whatever Krishna does is all right. You see, Krishna is making all the perfect arrangements. There's a nice story in this connection. Do you know that story, whatever Krishna does is all right? Does everyone know that story? Does anyone know that story? Anyone know that story? Whatever Krishna does is all right? Huh? Oh, I heard it in Mayapur, in the Bhagavatam. Yeah. But there was one... That's where I picked it up, years ago, during the Mayapur festival. But anyway, one of our sannyasi told the story. But I remember there was a king, you see. And he had this prime minister. And the prime minister always said, whatever Krishna does is all right. Some of you have heard already, but some of you may... Did everybody hear it? Did you hear it yet? Did you hear it? All right. I'll tell it again then. I love the story. So anyway, this prime minister, he was very Krishna conscious. He said, Your Majesty, whatever Krishna does is all right. Don't worry, Your Majesty. But one day the king cut his finger off, his little finger. He cut it off in some accident. And the prime minister said, don't worry, whatever Krishna does is all right. He was so angry. What? You rascal? I lost my finger. And you say it's all right? Get in the dungeon, you rascal. I'm going to put you in the darkest, deepest, dirtiest corner of the dungeon. You stay there and rot. He was so angry at the prime minister. He put him in the prison, you know, down in the dark, deepest, darkest, dungiest, dirtiest, dankest, corner of the dungeon, you know, where the rats were everywhere. It was horrible. Put him down there, you know. But you know, in the Vedic culture, those kings, they don't sit in the palace when there's a war. They lead the battle. They lead the battle. Even though we had our one president in the U.S., he had that valor, Teddy Roosevelt. He led the charge up San Juan Hill in Puerto Rico. But generally, the politicians nowadays, they're all cowards, you know. They just sit somewhere in the White House, you know, send all the young boys out to get slaughtered on the battlefield, you see. But in the Vedic culture, the king, he would lead the fight. He was very expert fighter, you see. He was very skilled at the art of killing, because you have to. War means killing. So he was very expert at killing. And he had to stay in shape. So when there's not a war, what will he do? Will he go around and kill citizens to keep in shape? No. He will go to the jungle and he'll kill the ferocious animals that are harassing the sages, you see. He won't hide behind a rock with a rifle. He will go and hang with a sword in hand and, you know, very, very bravely kill the animals, you see. Even recently, Prabhupada told how this used to be the practice. Even within recent years, the king of Jaipur, every year would go to the forest and kill a tiger with his bare hand. And maybe a knife or something, a sword. And they would bring the tiger in with a royal procession, honoring him as like the king of the jungle. They would bring the dead tiger in and parade him and give him an honor. You see. That is the Kshatriya style. They do them. The enemy is also honored. Actually, recently, even during World War I, there was valor amongst the fighter pilots in the sky. They behaved like gentlemen with each other. And finally, the famous Red Baron got shot down from the sky. The British gave him a hero's burial. You're German, yes. You're German, your famous German fighter pilot, the Red Baron. When he was shot down over the Britain by the British, they gave him an honors. They gave him a hero's burial as being a great hero. That was the Vedic system. You see, it was chivalry. So anyway, as a little aside, but the king would go to the forest and he would kill the animals, a ferocious animal, to keep his killing art intact. So. He just happened to be captured by a bunch of dacoits. The king was captured by some dacoits who were worshippers of Goddess Kali. They would capture human beings and offer them to Goddess Kali. That was their thing, to get more power for their thievery, you see. So, here the king has been kidnapped. Now they've bathed him, they dressed him in new silk, they gave him his final meal. They get him out of the slaughter and they go, oh my goodness, how could we be so spaced out we didn't realize he's missing a finger? Goddess Kali would be furious if we offer an imperfect human. She'll be furious. We can't offer a finger, a person missing a limb to Goddess Kali. She'll be very angry. So they let him go. And he's thinking, oh, wow, Krishna, yeah, whatever Krishna does is all right. I lost my finger, but I saved my life. The Prime Minister was right. Whatever Krishna does is all right. But he thought, oh my goodness, what have I done to the Prime Minister? He's there in the deepest, darkest, dankest, dirtiest corner of the dungeon with all those rats. It's a horrible thing I've done. Let me go release him right away. He got on the horse, he went riding back as fast as he could to the palace. He went down to the deepest, darkest, dankest corner of the dungeon to let the Prime Minister out. And there he was, open the door, and there he was. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And he said, the king was amazed. He said, my dear Prime Minister, I apologize to you. You're right. Whatever Krishna does is all right. He said, but you're not angry with me. You look so happy and peaceful. How could it be you're not angry? I've done such an injustice to you, throwing you in this horrible dungeon. Why are you not angry? He said, Your Majesty, whenever you go on those hunting trips, I always go with you, and I have all my fingers. Whatever Krishna does is all right. If the Prime Minister had been on the hunting trip, he would have been sacrificed to Goddess Kali. So in this way, we have to see, even it may be a reverse, we may be thrown in a dungeon, we may lose our finger, something that appears very inauspicious, you see. It may appear very, very inauspicious. But actually, we have to see whatever Krishna does is all right. He's perfectly in control of everything. No one has anything to ever to be in anxiety or bewildered by any situation you're in. Whatever it may be, I don't care what it is. Whatever your situation, it's Krishna's perfect arrangement so that you can come back to Him. I'm talking about every single living entity throughout the entire existence is in a perfect situation, arranged by Krishna, so they can come back to Him as soon as possible. Everyone's being taught a lesson, are rewarded in such a, being placed in such a way to help them come back to Krishna at the earliest possible moment. That's everybody's situation. So all one has to do is realize that. And therefore you won't become bewildered. Someone might say, but I'm suffering with this disease. You know, I have this horrible disease, this horrible situation. I'm so much bewildered and anxiety by it. But that's not the right attitude. The right attitude is this: tatte nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vapakam tadvagvapuvi vidadang namaste jiveta yomuki pate sadaya bhak. My dear Lord, those persons who are who are constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them, who are suffering, who while suffering the reactions to their past misdeeds are constantly offering you respectful obeisances from within the innermost core of their hearts, are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So this is the actual position. The devotee sees whatever is coming. It may be good, it may be apparently bad situation. He sees everything as the special blessings upon Krishna to help him get over the reactions for his past misdeeds, to come back to home, back to Godhead as soon as possible. And he's always thanking Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, for this situation. Thank you very much, Krishna, for putting me in this situation. So one who is always thankful and grateful for the position that he is in, he can never be bewildered. He can never be bewildered. He's always feeling gratitude. Krishna, you're so kind for putting me in this difficult situation. This is your great blessing upon me. So such a person is, you see, they are unbewildered, a some Buddha. Huh? Huh?
I know a Jew in that way.
Yeah?
He was captured by the Nazis, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Who believed in God.
Right.
And prayed to God every day.
The Nazis are believing also?
No, not just the Nazis.
Just the Jew.
The Jew. So he put on a boat to bring to some prison, somewhere right. On the island. So there was a storm and the ship went down and he got away. Thanks God, he was like that. He was swimming, and then he saw the shore nearby, where he was swimming to the shore. He comes closer, then he saw a flag. He comes closer, and what he saw, swastika. You see, and then he knew, swastika, Nazi. So he said, God, I always worship you. And I always admire you, like you said, but sometimes I
yeah.
Because if you come to the shore, you will again in the hands of the Nazis, and then you will be killed.
Yeah.
You get that point. Mm-hmm. So he could not actually see it as a favor.
See, that's a materialist. That's a materialist. A devotee will see everything. He will actually have the way to see everything as Krishna's special mercy upon him. So if he is captured for being put to death, he will see, I'm not being killed. He will see that Krishna has some plan for me to serve him in a different situation. So if I am captured by my enemy and put to death, that is alright. That is up to Krishna. Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke. If Krishna wants to kill me, nobody can protect me. And if Krishna wants to protect me, nobody can kill me, you see. He sees, well, if Krishna wants me to be killed, then even if the whole allied forces came to try to protect me, you see, from the Nazis, they would not be successful if Krishna wants me to be killed. And if Krishna wants me to be killed, that's all right. I'm his devotee. My body belongs to him. It simply means, you see, if one thinks I am the body, then it's bewildering. But if you realize I'm not the body, you just think, well, I guess it's time to trade in my car and a new one, you see. When your car gets old, and someone says, now you have to, we have a special good news for you. You just won this drawing, and there's a new Mercedes waiting for you down at the car dealer. Just come down and trade in your model and a new Mercedes. Who would feel bad? Oh, I have to trade in my old Renault for a Mercedes. Is there any problem? See, a devotee, he sees, well, this is Krishna's arrangement. He's going to upgrade my body, that's all. He's going to give me... Huh? Huh?
Put him in a better situation, more favorable situation for him to advance.
Yeah, he would just see, well, there's no harm. At least I can preach to the Nazis before they put me to death, tell them to chant Hare Krishna. Jesus Christ, yeah. Yeah. See, a devotee thinks this is a great preaching opportunity. I get to do something, some glorious thing. While they're putting me to death, I can chastise them for their... for their ignorance and enlighten them in transcendental knowledge, you see. So devotee doesn't, even if he's captured and he's being put to death, he doesn't think badly. This is Krishna's arrangement. So Thagman Prabhupada was in Calcutta during World War II. The Japanese, you see, they were attacking Calcutta. And the bombs were falling. Now, you know, Prabhupada, he never rushed through prasadam, you see. Prasadam for him was worship, it was meditation. When he would take prasadam, it would be very deep and meditative experience. He wouldn't just like, you know, shovel it in like passionate devotees, we just sometimes may do that, you see. But he would take it with great bhakti. With great bhakti he would take. So anyway, when the Japanese were coming, the sirens were going off, you know, everyone go to your shelters, bomb shelter. But Prabhupada was taking his lunch. He's not about to be disrespectful to prasad. He's not going to grab his prasadam and, you know, throw it in something and run. No. He was peacefully taking his prasadam. And then as the bombs were falling, Prabhupada gave, he was very good at making, duplicating with the sounds. He would go, chi kyam. That the bombs are making the sound, chi kyam. And he said, when I heard the bombs falling, I was thinking, here is Krishna. Prabhupada is seeing, just like Krishna says, I am death. Mrityu sarva harashchaham. I am all-devouring death. So he was simply fearlessly taking his prasadam, saying, oh, here is Krishna. If Krishna wants to take me while I'm honoring prasad, that's all right. I will simply honor my prasad very nicely and leave it up to Krishna. So he peacefully took his prasad when the bombs were falling. So this is the mood of a devotee. He's completely undevoted. He sees everything in relationship with Krishna. He never lets anything agitate his mind or disturb it. Now sometimes one may say, well, why the spiritual master chastises me? Is he a materialist? Why does he get disturbed with my misbehavior? Actually, Prabhupada never got disturbed with our misbehavior, but he had to show that he was disturbed for the purpose of training us. There was one pastime when Prabhupada was in Mexico City. And this is a very good lesson for our devotees nowadays also. Devotees had been up late preaching and nobody came to Mangalarti. Does it sound familiar? ISKCON nowadays, nobody coming to Mangalarti. But anyway, Prabhupada was furious. But nobody came to Mangalarti. He was chastising the devotee. They came for class and he was just chastising them so heavy. They was like, oh. It was like, oh. They was just, when Prabhupada chastises, he can really chastise. I mean, he can tear you up one side, down the other side, completely smash you, and then smash you even further, and then smash you even further, and smash you even further. Where you think there's nothing left and you still find something to even smash you further. Prabhupada is the most expert at chastisement, you see. To really, really chastise. So the devotees was like, they were shaking. Prabhupada was so angry that they didn't come to Mangalarti, you see. And then the temple president, our godbrother Tichukananda Prabhu, he said he was always like Prabhupada's puppy dog. He would follow him around like a little puppy, you know, following the mother dog. You know. So he followed Prabhupada out of the room, out of the temple room after the class. And there was some, in Mexico there's a tropical climate, there was some beautiful flowers going there outside the door. You know, very aromatic, little beautiful flowers. So he picked one and offered it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada took and just, you know, very peacefully, serenely, calmly, relished that wonderful aroma, that flower, you see. Now, 60 seconds or like 2 minutes, something like that, before that, Prabhupada was roaring like Nisringa, just in complete anger mode. And now he was just like a little lamb. He was just completely serene and blissful, you know. And Chitsukananda was amazed. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you were so angry, but now you're so serene. What is this? Prabhupada said, actually, I'm never angry with my disciples. I'm never angry with But I'm simply doing like that for the sake of training you. So you can't say all that the spiritual master, you get so agitated sometimes. No, that is his love, that is his kindness upon the disciples. To help them get over their narrative. The spiritual master actually does not chastise his disciples. He's their enemy. If he doesn't, this guru who does not chastise, he is enemy of the disciples. Because he's not reforming them. He's not saving them from their bad qualities. The spiritual master must correct the disciples when they make mistakes. It's his duty. So, that's the Sammudo. Then the next one is Brahmavid. Means he knows the Supreme perfectly. So, how is it that a Vaishnava knows the Supreme perfectly? Is it his own intelligence? That he figured it all out by mental speculation? No. Because he accepted that message which has come through the Guru Parampara system. He has submitted himself to the previous Acharya, to his spiritual master. And therefore, he knows things as they are. Prabhupada calls this Bhagavad Gita as it is, not out of pride, but it's just telling the truth. Because he is presenting the Bhagavad Gita as he heard it from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Therefore, it's Bhagavad Gita as it is. So Prabhupada knows the absolute truth because he has heard it. The materialist would say, oh, anybody who claims they know the absolute truth is obviously an egotist. They're conceited, they're proud, because nobody can know the absolute truth. That's what they will say. But again, we have to ask them, are you absolutely sure that nobody can know the absolute truth? In other words, they cannot say that it's not one cannot know the absolute truth, because that in itself is an absolute. Is it? When they say you cannot know the absolute truth, they are claiming that they know an absolute truth, that nobody can know the absolute truth. So that's contradictory. So we should see through the fallacy of the logic of these materialistic people. They're just trying to cover their sense gratification. They're trying to hide the fact that they're greedy, lusty people. Conceited, greedy, lusty people. They use, through flowery philosophy, they try to cover up their lust, their greed, and their selfishness. Really, that's all they're doing. They're not pure, they're not saintly. So the last item is Brahmanistitaha, situated in transcendence. In other words, they are Krishna conscious. That's what it means to be situated in transcendence. There are three levels of transcendence: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The Vaishnavas, they are situated, they are not only situated in transcendence, they are situated on the highest level of transcendence. There's no higher level than that. That is the perfection of consciousness. To become Krishna conscious is the perfection of the evolution of consciousness. So we're very happy to see that all of you have taken up this pathway seriously. Some of you are my disciples. I very much appreciate you have taken this pathway seriously under my guidance and direction. And this is a very, very auspicious opportunity that we have, all by the mercy of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, that He's brought us all together in this transcendental pathway. Yes, there. So we are eternally indebted to His Divine Grace for giving us this wonderful society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, known in its acronym form as ISKCON. We're very grateful to Srila Prabhupada that He's brought us all together as a spiritual family. Otherwise, how would we have any connection with each other? If it wasn't for Prabhupada, we wouldn't have any connection. So it is a very special thing that we can come together today in this home to study these wonderful teachings of Krishna as presented perfectly and thoroughly and completely by Srila Prabhupada, and how we can make our lives perfect by putting these teachings into practical application. So I can ask now if there's any questions.
In order to understand.
Yeah. So yes, it is the mercy of Krishna that you can have the vision of seeing everything.
That's right.
So that mercy is gotten by the grace of the bona fide spiritual master. He is distributing that mercy. That is the guru's business, distributing the mercy of Krishna. So when one comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master and you open your heart to him, then you get that mercy. He gives you the mercy of Krishna. Prabhupada said, the spiritual master is not bringing his own mercy. He is bringing the mercy of Krishna. Samsara dava nanalita loka. You see, the spiritual master is extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence. It's like a cloud is pouring water in the fire. So is the cloud manufacturing its own water? No. It's bringing the water from the ocean. Krishna is the ocean. Guru is the messenger of Krishna. He is bringing the water from the ocean and dropping it on the forest fire. And that's what it is. So right now our hearts are blazing in a forest fire. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. But by taking shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, then he can extinguish that blazing fire of material existence. Any other questions? Now's your chance. It'll be another year before you see me again. So all the questions have been answered then? Actually, this philosophy does answer all the questions. So there's no difficulties. Everyone is finding the pathway smooth and easy now. All the obstacles have been pushed aside now. It's just smooth, easy journey back to home, back to God. There's no bumps along the road. Everything's smooth and easy now. No problem. Huh? Any problem? Anyone having any difficulties? No difficulties. You're making my job too easy. You're supposed to have difficulties. So I can... Actually, I get many difficulties in the email. You don't worry if you don't have any difficulties. I get tons of them in the email every day. Gurudev, I have this problem, I have that problem. Guru Maharaj, please help me, I have this thing. I have what to do. I get so many problems. But if everyone's satisfied, there's no questions, everybody's having... Stephanie, you're chanting 16 rounds regularly? Did we ask you that? You're chanting 16 rounds? Not yet. How many rounds do you chant? One or two. So you need to increase. You need to increase your chanting. Do you know why? Because if you're in the ocean, then you're drowning, you see. You need to have your nose above the water to be able to breathe. You need to keep your nose above the water. So two rounds is getting you're getting a little bit of air, but not enough to save you. You need to 16 rounds to elevate you just enough to where your nose stays above the water and you can breathe, get good spiritual energy. It's good you're starting, but you need to increase that. Because that means you can't be fully absorbed in the spiritual nature. Two rounds. You're moving in the right direction. But you need to, 16 rounds is the bare minimum to keep your nose above the water for the material ocean. See, otherwise, you know, you're getting a little air, you're getting a little sustenance, but then the material nature keeps sucking you back in again. So to be able to be strong and steady with the material nature can't grab you and pull you back, you need to chant 16. So if you can Will you agree? Will you chant four rounds every day now as an initial commitment? All right, four rounds beginning today. All right, very good. I think everybody else is chanting 16 rounds. I don't know about this lady, but. Sixteen rounds. Very good. Very good. So I think you're the only one who's not chanting 16 rounds. But you're in good company. Everybody here is chanting at least 16. You're chanting 16 rounds? Oh, you make it up. Well, Papa did say we can make it up. As long as you're making it up, then it's okay. Because you're covering your 16 every day. Oh, that's good. Sort of. Well, no, you have to make sure you're always covering your 16. From now on, your duty, you must cover 16 from now on. You must count very carefully. Make sure you're not missing. Huh? Now you have to make sure you're covering 16 without fail from now on. If you only do 21, only do 14 one day, you got to do 18 the next day. Now you have to. The key is early morning, chanting in the early morning. That helps. You get up for Mangalarti, and then you chant during the Japa period. What I like to do is get up before Mangalarti and chant before Mangalarti, so I can do some puja or some reading during the Japa period. But you need to. You need from now on. You got to cover 16 every day. Okay. For what? Taking a shower? Two hours to get ready for Mangalarti? No. Why is that? No, you need to get it down where you should be able to get ready by a half an hour. That's another thing you got to do. That means you have to get up at 2:30 in the morning to go to Mangalarti? Oh. Now, Susan, you really have to get it together. You got to learn to become efficient, Just get in there. I mean, the old days in ISKCON, we used to have 100 devotees sharing one bathroom. Talk about efficiency. Remember those days? I mean, you were given 20 seconds for your shower, and that was it, You get in, and the next. You really have to get it together. You should be able to, within 20 minutes, 30 minutes, be completely ready for Monday. That way you get more sleep. No, you have to really, you got to tighten up your morning program. This isn't good. 2 hours, that's ridiculous. Yeah, you got to get it down to a half an hour, okay? You work on that now. Between now and next, when I come back next time, I'm going to ask you, how long does it take to get ready for Monday night? You got to get it down to a half an hour, okay? Okay, so yes, go ahead.
If it's not so much important than how many the number of rounds, I heard, please correct me, but also the quality of chanting.
Both things. The numerical strength is very important, but the quality has to be there also. Those 16 rounds should be chanted perfectly, actually. Every utterance should be, every syllable should be perfectly uttered. So it takes time to develop that art, but we must do the numerical strength every day. If you don't do the numerical strength, you're not going to, because you're disobeying the order of Srila Prabhupada, you're never going to get the quality. See, anything less than 16 rounds, you're disobeying the order of the spiritual master. So automatically, you're namaparati. Say, I'll chant 8 rounds perfectly instead of 16 rounds inattentively. But that 8 rounds means you've neglected Prabhupada's order to chant 16 rounds. So that 8 rounds is offensive. I don't care how good your 8 rounds may be. You're committing namaparad. You're disobeying the Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, when you connect what about other Vaishnavas who tells you minimum 6 wives? I also speak to
Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada. Well, the question is, which guru do you want to connect yourself with? That's the question. The question is, all right, some gurus, they say you can chant 6 rounds and go back to Gaudiya. So maybe I'll take initiation from this one because it's an easier deal. You see, Prabhupada is more demanding, 16 rounds. So maybe I better not be in Prabhupada's mind. You see, but we have to see. All right, then you compare the two gurus, the 6-round guru and the 16-round guru. You have to see this 16-round guru, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. If you study, you will see that he has more Krishna Shakti for spreading this Krishna Ganga's movement. He is the only guru in the history of the world who was able to spread Krishna Ganga's movement all over the world. He's the only one. Srila Prabhupada has some special Shakti that no other guru had. Now others are coming along in Prabhupada's wake and they're going on, and within the momentum that he created, they're acting within his momentum. But Prabhupada was the only one who had the momentum to actually do that. The Gaudiya Math people thought this is just some poetic simile. When Lord Chaitanya says, Priti Vitti Acha Yatra Nagaradigam Sarvatra Prachar Hoi Bimuranam, it's just some poetry. They didn't think it could ever happen. Only Prabhupada had the potency, had the vision, had the Shakti, had the courage, had the humility, and had the tolerance to come and live with the hippies in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. No one else would have done that. Only Prabhupada could do that. Actually lower himself to living with hippies who were making him stand in line to take a shower with him. In his own bathroom, he had to stand in line with these hippies. They didn't even think, well, the Swamiji should go first in the line. They had Swamiji standing in line with them. Who is that humble? Who is that tolerant? Only Prabhupada had that degree of humility and tolerance. So we should never think that all the gurus went, oh, he's a Gaudiya sannyasi, he's this and that. They are not the same. Only Prabhupada had the depth of compassion, the depth of tolerance. Only Prabhupada had the vision to do what he did, and no one else had that vision. No one else will ever be able to take that position that Prabhupada had. He is truly Jagat Guru. Therefore, if it's a question of the 6-round guru, the 16-round guru, I strongly suggest to everyone, take that guru who has the most powerful connection. Connect yourself with his sampradaya. That guru has the most powerful connection, the greatest realization, the greatest shakti, the greatest potency, and who has the power to make this whole world Krishna conscious. There's no other guru on this planet, and there's no other guru in the history. Even Lord Chaitanya did not manifest the shakti of making the entire world Krishna conscious. That shakti for making the whole world Krishna conscious, we have seen only the one spiritual master, and that is His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Therefore, I recommend 16 rounds, Guru.
Now,
did
you speak to separatism? Are we a better? Are we not so good?
No, it's not separatism.
No, I understand.
All the cars are good, but I'm going to drive the best car. We don't say ours is the only car on the road. The other cars have to get off the road. But I'm going to drive the best car. I'm going to drive the car which is objectively the best car. Not subjectively. Objectively. You can objectively analyze which guru has the potency for making the whole world Krishna conscious. Who had the vision to do that. No other guru had that vision. Srila Prabhupada will go down in history. No one can take that position. Srila Prabhupada. He has a special Shakti that no one else has. No one else can claim they have the same Shakti as Prabhupada. If they do, they're deluding themselves and they're deluding their followers. I'll tell you right now. They're deluding themselves and deluding their followers. If they want to present, they have the same Shakti as Srila Prabhupada. They don't.
Who's also preaching right at the moment in know maybe the name, he said actually, he compared Prabhupada, you know, in person, he plowed the field. You know, in Rajasthan, there's very dry heat, and to plow the field is very hard. So anyway, he managed, Prabhupada, given he was spreading Krishna consciousness worldwide, he plowed the field, and he compared himself. I'm just there simply to fill in his feet. I mean, to be part of it. So
Prabhupada's doing everything.
Yeah, yeah. But
through his followers, Prabhupada is doing the whole thing. He's plowing the field, he's sowing the seeds, he's harvesting, he's distributing the food. Prabhupada is doing everything through his ISKCON. He's doing the whole nine yards. Prabhupada is not just plowing the field, Prabhupada is doing everything. He's plowing the field, he's planting the seeds, he's growing the crops, he's distributing he's cutting the carrots, he's putting it in the pot along with the spices, he's stirring it, he's offering it, everything. He's distributing it. Prabhupada is doing everything through his ISKCON movement.
Why is he following the left ISKCON?
Why someone has left ISKCON? Because they didn't understand. Someone has left ISKCON. That means they haven't understood what it's their ignorance, actually. It's their ignorance. They're ignorant of what actually is ISKCON is. Anyone who actually understands what is ISKCON, they would never leave ISKCON. They're ignorant. Somehow or other, they never understood what is ISKCON. That's why they left.
We're not sectarian. We have to have the mercy.
There's many cars on the road. They're all welcome on the road, but I'm going to ride in the best car. All the cars are welcome on the road. We have no objection. But I'm going to ride in the best car. It does the best job of getting me where I need to go. Don't ask me to give up to ride in a car which is not as good as the best car. I'm going to ride in the best car. Somebody offers me a Rolls Royce, yeah, I'm going to ride in the Rolls Royce. Yes. You write me in an email. Yeah, we'll just, you write me email or send me a regular letter if you don't have internet. And discuss in detail, and then I'll give you personal instruction this week. Okay, so I think we can stop here. And now the next phase of the program, whatever that is. Shadam, okay. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Raja Vidya, Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.